Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Little Bits, the easy way to build electronics with modular building blocks. Go to littlebits.com/android and you'll receive $20 off your first kit plus free shipping in the U.S. And by NatureBox. NatureBox ships tasty and guilt-free snacks right to your door with over 100 flavors to choose from, like Asiago and cheddar cheese crisps, pistachio, power clusters, and Big Island pineapple. You'll never get bored of snacking again. Try NatureBox at naturebox.com/twit. That's naturebox.com/twit. And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you all the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. And welcome to another episode of All About Android, episode 209, recorded on Tuesday, April 14th, 2015. We're your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
I'm Ron Richards.
Welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be
Assemble,
back.
Unite.
I'm rocking the Nexus 9.
I noticed no computer.
No laptop.
No standard laptop.
I always get complaints about the Mac, whatever. Luckily, that Mac is RIP, so I'm going with the laptop Bluetooth keyboard combination.
It's a nice combo.
Yeah.
What do you think with the dock and everything? You're
running... Honestly, if longtime viewers might remember, I tried this when the Nexus 7 came out in 2012. So that was 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And it was difficult to say the least, but thanks to the updates to Sheets, the new version.
Miles better now.
Ultimately, I'm eyeing a Pixel. I'm thinking about it. We'll see. We'll see where I go. But for now, this is working pretty nicely.
I'd say Pixel is pretty good direction to go.
I've been jealous of your Pixel for a long time, I'll be honest.
You can't be jealous of this because this is outdated now.
This isn't
the new Pixel.
Right.
The new Pixel is
nice. Yeah, that is the hotness. Yeah. So
awesome stuff. We are super thrilled to welcome back Daniel Bader, editor in chief. I saw on your Twitter ID at Mobile Syrup. How's it going, sir?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's awesome to get you back on the show to give the fresh Canadian perspective.
The polite point of view.
Shut up.
Exactly. That's why we bring you on. Actually, it's always great when you come onto the show because you definitely bring a certain kind of edge to your opinions around Android, which is not necessarily something that most people would expect out of a Canadian publication.
I'd expect a lot of apologies.
Yes.
And
you know, let's just keep down this road of stereotypes.
Sorry, Daniel.
Please do.
You're like, God, I'm so sick.
We'll prove some of them right.
All right.
As long as you tell me a dad joke at least once, I'll give you some politeness.
I'll work on it. Plenty of dad jokes in the pre-show, by the way, which is more reason for you to, stop by when we're supposed to start at 5 p.m. Pacific.
Yeah.
We normally start about half an hour late, and that's because all we do for that entire half hour is tell dad jokes.
Pretty much. It's just like it's amateur hour improv, stand-up dad jokes.
We think we're hilarious.
Yeah. Live.twit.tv, 5 o'clock Pacific.
That's right. See you then. Okay, this week we've got a lot to discuss. We'll be talking all about
Android?
Updated... Yeah. See, that's why it's a great name. An updated material design spec that Google just released. Possible details of Google's MVNO project. The new trusted voice security option. We can talk about whether that's a good idea or not. And more. But before we do, distribution time. Android distribution numbers are out. And Lollipop is now up there at 5.4%.
It's the best time of year. I love the numbers.
Yeah, well, I know. It's
the Q1.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's just a start of a new quarter. You're right. Yeah.
So 5.4%. Google I.O. is but 1 month away.
Wow.
That was when we first heard about Lollipop and got the developer preview.
Is this good growth then?
I don't know. 5.4%. And how long has Lollipop officially been out there? Since October? November, wasn't it? So about 6 months now?
About there, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So 5% of the population in 6 months? I wanted
to be more than that.
I was going to say, I would look back, look at the KitKat adoption rate to see if
I know.
That's
what I should have done is pull those, but I didn't.
Yeah, no, I should have as well too.
Regardless of whether I had or not, 5% at 6 months in, and regardless of how it compares to previous versions, I mean, is that acceptable? What do you think, Daniel?
You know what? I'm of the opinion that the first the biggest updates from Google, you know, Ice Cream Sandwich, to a lesser extent, Gingerbread and Jelly Bean, but definitely Ice Cream Sandwich. It was buggy, right, when it came out. It was buggy for a long time. And Lollipop, I think, has been the most buggy of any Android distribution to date, especially on devices that, you know, like the Nexus 6 that were supposed to come out of the box really stable and fast and all that stuff. And I think that the fact that it's taken this long probably isn't a bad thing. I mean, on paper, maybe it looks bad to outsiders, but insiders know that 5.1 is such a huge update. I think most people should be kind of waiting and seeing how it affects their own device before taking the plunge.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. By having it available on the Nexus devices first and then the usual waiting game for the over-the-air updates to roll out and that sort of thing, I mean, that's going to affect these numbers as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're absolutely right. Lollipop straight out of the gate had its problems, and 5.1 addressed a lot of it.
Yeah, it really did.
But the thing was is that I had a Nexus 5 and I went for 5.0 immediately and I just dealt with the problems. I mean, that could be because we're who we are, but I wonder if people really, if you get that system update icon, do you ignore it? Like, even if you heard there were, I remember like when I got my, my new Nexus 5, it was right when 5.1 was rolling out and there were all these posts warning of a memory leak in Nexus 5s and don't install it. I'm like, no, I'm going to install it. I'll see what, you know, and I'll deal with it when that happens, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think if I got that system update, I wouldn't be able to install it. And sure. I wonder if regular users are the same way. You see an update, you do it.
Right? I actually wonder if regular users, like users that don't care, you know, don't even really truly understand what a system update is.
Yeah.
Actually end up tapping it and doing it.
Yeah.
It might actually scare them to see something like that.
But the thing is that little microchip icon stays in your notifications. You can't, even if you're like, no, I don't want to do it, it comes right back. You know, like they want you to do it.
Yeah, of course.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and you know, who was it? Someone in chat, I can't remember because it's scrolled out a little bit here, but 5% of the greater pool of Android devices in sheer numbers is actually a large number.
Yeah.
That doesn't really help, you know, folks who are developing for Android and developing for Lollipop and all that kind of stuff, and people that need, you know, the security updates and some of the other, you know, advanced features of Lollipop. Doesn't help those people that are outside of those 5%, but 5% of the total pool is a large number, I suppose.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see.
I would love for someday for that to be.
Well, it will. I mean, it'll
quicker.
Yeah, I think it will. It'll be interesting at I.O. at the end of May to see what kind of, not spin, but what kind of positioning Google places with the development, with the rollout of Lollipop, whether it's a percentage of active, you know, like is there some way to slice the data to make it look like more, or will they address that it's just 5%? You know,
right.
Even though that is a large number of devices, but still, you know, it's like, you know, whether, is Google happy with this adoption rate?
Yeah. Good question.
Yeah.
Hey, that was kind of newsy, but let's check out some actual more newsy news.
Ever wonder where Spider-Man gets his news from? The web. But you can get everything here on Android News.
Oh.
Oh. That was
good.
Oh, Brian.
No?
No, I like that. That was good.
I mean, I'll give it.
It feels like something my dad would say.
But
cool with that. I appreciate that you took the pre-show theme and applied it to the news bumper.
So
and that could have been scripted. That could have been written.
I was going to say, was that prepared or was that off the cuff?
That was a little prepared. Thankfully, you guys riffed about the Android distribution long enough.
We played right into his hands.
You could crunch the numbers and narrow it down. User 6950 in the chat room says, thanks, Dad. Thank you, Brian. Right. I'm not going to call you Dad. That's just weird.
That's weird. Now it's getting weird.
Google continues to try to keep developers in the know on how to make apps successfully more modern and in line with Material Design spec. Google released an updated spec highlighting additional components for developers to pay attention to. Among those, data sets and tables and how to present them, a description of the various units of measurement that are used throughout the spec, which seems pretty handy, actually, more insight into how to structure an app in regards to top-level navigation, motion design tools that are meant to make working with software like After Effects a bit more streamlined for developing your apps. A section devoted to the all-too-familiar at this point floating action button. I love that feature of material design, including what is good for, tips on transitions, because, you know, often it kind of moves in motions and all that kind of stuff. And updates to typography, cards, dialogues, tabs, scrolling, all to fit into material design's style. So good on Google to provide the updated information and to give developers kind of the guidance that they need to stay modern. However, on the flip side, developers more and more are kind of being pushed into the designer role, which they kind of seem like two separate areas to me. Is that a lot to ask?
You're treading into dangerous waters.
Am I?
The line between
Sometimes I like asking those dangerous questions and then letting everybody answer.
Well, it's funny because before in the pre-show when you stepped away, Daniel and I were talking about the arenas, the app arena, and we'll talk about my app in the arena, which has a material design look. And, you know, Daniel, you commented how it was great to see new apps or adopting material design or whatever. I feel as if the material design has been nothing but a good thing for developers because it gives allows a developer who might not be a designer a toolkit to make something that looks pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fair point.
Yeah. I'd agree with that.
Yeah, it's a base. It's somewhere to build from. And I think that, you know, I love this floating action button page, the dedicated one that they just created, because it gives you pixel distances between for both the size of the floating action button and the padding between the fab and the other components of a certain screen. And these are such specific things that it's really hard to screw up a basic Android screen now. You know, to make just a basic news or sort of note-taking app, it doesn't take a whole lot of kind of design flourishes to make something that you could at least say is usable. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what they're going with here.
And the thing is that it's been nothing but good.
Yeah.
I have yet to find an app that has attempted a material design implementation.
Like, actually, that doesn't work for you.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and some folks in the chat room were complaining about WhatsApp's recent redesign, which I don't really say is fully material design. I feel like they were kind of inching towards it. I posted an article on my Google Plus page that I thought was really interesting from Feedly. And Feedly was talking about their implementation of material design.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gotten some criticism as people think they didn't go far enough with material design. But it's interesting to see what the thought process is as people are taking established apps and moving them to the material design world.
You know,
like we just saw it with Pocket Casts. You know, mm-hmm. that was an app that had a very independent look, and they somehow were able to merge their independent look and design of their app with material design and make it work.
Yeah, and that's always been my big question about material design is it's so spelled out that how does a brand maintain its kind of brand differentiation, you know, from a presentation standpoint? Yeah. It really does seem like apps, by and large, are able to do that and still kind of fall within their lines. It's probably part of why some apps have certain elements of material design and don't go the full distance, which I think I'm kind of okay with.
Yeah.
You know, things like the floating action button, I've grown to really love that because it's a super easy to pick up on visual guide as to like the important action of the screen.
Yeah.
And so I love any time that anybody incorporates that. LastPass actually just did an update, a fantastic update that incorporates material design one and just makes the service even easier to use on mobile. That's kind of a side tangent on here, but ultimately it's really great to kind of see these apps kind of get moved into this new design language. And it's a spectrum.
It's a spectrum of how much they'll apply to it. But I think the most important thing, I mean, we've been very, very clear about our support and our appreciation of material design. But I think this particular bit of news is important because it shows that Google just didn't put it out there and then walk away.
Yeah.
Say, here's the thing, now do it, and then we're going to go work on stuff. They've got a team who are continuing to refine it, getting feedback from developers, getting feedback, you know, from outside third-party developers, and then adjusting and clarifying as needed, and material design becomes this growing, I hate to say living document, but it's this living spec that hopefully is around for a long time because it will evolve as things come up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And JJ to the 4884 in the chat room poses this question, which none of us can answer, but it's still interesting to think about. Is this a standard for a long time, or how long does material design stick around for? I mean, you have to imagine it not forever and ever.
Ice cream. Google has solved design.
I know, period. We're just doing this forever. You know, Hollow was an effort and definitely a big change to Android, and it lasted for only a certain amount of time. I don't know. Anyone want to throw a number out there, go on the record? 3, 4, 10 years?
10 years.
10 years.
Well, I think I use the watch analogy a lot, right? Like, a good-looking watch is timeless. And,
right.
I think that there are basic objective elements to design that work better than others. And I'm certainly not a designer, and I've never designed anything more than, you know, an invitation for a birthday. But I think that, you know, when I encourage people to go to this spec page, and especially this floating action button page, because they give do's and don'ts for certain aspects of apps. And one here, they say, don't give the floating action button extra dimension. So this floating action button has a subtle shadow that aims, you know, to the right, and it has some depth to it, but they don't have this long shadow that, you know, makes it seem like a three-dimensional object, right? And I think that that's really the differentiation here. They want things to live in a 2D space and have dimension without feeling like you're playing some sort of game that was developed in Unity or OpenGL, right? You want it to still be a tangible thing that you can press and feel like is part of the real world.
Yeah, this is, I'm just kind of, I'm suddenly getting lost in the
trying to look, yeah, I'm looking right for the little, yeah. Like.
That's Alex's great article that he put out earlier, I think last summer.
Yeah, this is just on Lollipop in general. And I suppose you'll see the floating, if you scroll down just a little bit more, you'll see the calculator, so you can kind of see the floating. Isn't it part of it? No, it's not. No, trying to see if there's an app.
Google Plus.
There you go.
Yeah. There's one, yeah, the plus, yeah, the plus sign on there. There it is, yeah.
So it's there, but it's not too far removed. And that sounds like such a little detail, but I suppose consistency in this regard is
so subtle, but it means so much when it's like that. Yeah. So very cool.
So cool. Good on you, Google. Thank you.
So in what is sure to provide hilarity for this group of people, we've seen the rumors and the screenshots, but now it looks as if Google's Trusted Voice option is rolling out to some Lollipop users. For those who aren't aware of it, Trusted Voice is another way to unlock your phone, but this time it allows users to simply say, "Okay, Google," at the lock screen in order to successfully unlock the device.
You didn't just unlock my phone.
Yeah, well, that's because the voice print needs to match the user's voice model. Okay. And so basically what you would do is you would tell your phone, you'd say, "Okay, Google," several times, and it would pick up your voice print, and then it would only, supposedly, only unlock when you say, "Okay, Google." But Google does... But Google does say that this is less secure than methods like a PIN or password or pattern unlock.
Yes.
So by no means is Google saying it's more secure than those items. But if you want to live in the future and talk to your phone and use that to unlock it, you will be able to. Your mileage may vary.
Yeah, it's not in my smart lock settings. It's not there. Yep. Oh, well. But at the same time, I don't know if I would use that one very much.
Okay, Google.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Take it.
There you go. Didn't do it.
Yeah. Believe it, Ron. That didn't work.
Ha! I just love everyone listening at home if their device is going off.
I know. And they think it's hilarious at this point. Every single episode of All Bad Android, you set off my phone.
I mean, but it's neat that they're trying things. I mean, again, I also don't know. Like we joked when Face Unlock came out. Like, oh, wow, that's neat. I'm not going to use that. But it's a neat thing. But it's not the most secure of things, at least at this point.
Do you guys remember that spate of Xbox One trollers who would name their avatars Xbox Turn Off, and then people would go, "Damn you, Xbox Turn Off," and their Xboxes were Turn Off.
I hadn't heard about that. That's brilliant.
That's really good.
Brilliant. Human hacking. Hacking the humans. Yeah. Cool stuff. Yeah, I'll try it out. I probably won't keep it on because the smart lock options, that the other ones I find really useful enough, you know, Trusted Place, on body, security
protection,
or whatever it's called,
on body
protection, which is actually pretty handy. And then, you know, syncing it to my watch is kind of the number one thing.
Yeah. For me, the location based, and when it connects to a car, You know, like, so I've got it Bluetooth set up with my sister's car back in New York. So when I get into it.
Yeah, that's really handy.
Yeah, so when you're driving, the last thing you want to do is look down and do your PIN or do anything like that. So that's a great implementation. So,
Neat. Let's see here. Okay, so Rumorville. Although, you know, we heard a little bit, I believe we heard a little bit from Sundar Pichai like a month or two ago, just very briefly touch on this. But a firmware image for Nexus 6. That surfaced online a week ago actually reveals what could be a companion app for Google's rumored upcoming MVNO service. Android Police was there, of course, to do their exhaustive thing. Look at this treasure. An APK found on the image called Tyco.apk reveals the service to be called Project Fi, although that could change, complete with a launcher icon and logo. Whether Fi refers to fiber or could refer to Wi-Fi, who knows at this point. But what they were able to discern from this is that users could request a new number and transfer a number from inside the app. Also, a ton of code posted alluding to customers being charged for what they used and credited for anything unused at the end of the month, which is kind of nice. Calls and texts to the U.S. Would be free with international at low rates, similar to what we have right now with voice and Hangouts. Shut up, phone. I didn't say the magic words. Why are you doing this to me? Support for data-only service, which is neat, although it's not clear whether that would apply to phones or whether it could be something like your in-dash, you know, in the car, which I really like the idea of that.
I didn't even think about that. Wow.
Yeah, pretty cool. Easy switching of phones with a single button.
Yeah.
So, and that kind of reminds me of, you know, something that you might be able to do that you can do with voice in certain ways right now. Confirmation that Sprint and T-Mobile would be partners, but nothing conclusive about how it would switch between those networks or, you know, how that would go down. No hints on launch date. Or time or anything like that. And no sign-up restrictions when it does launch were kind of listed in there. We had heard rumors that it might be locked to the Nexus 6 at launch, and that very well still could be the case. But there was very little to nothing in here that really alluded to that. And I think it goes without saying that Google I.O. is in a month, and we're kind of getting into that weird territory where as we get closer, we're going to hear a lot more rumors of things and probably some of those are going to be announced at I.O. Some of those will just become vapor. So who knows where this stands, but I'm hoping for it. What do you think, Daniel? Is this something that you could get behind? If Google does what they don't normally do, which is launch in Canada from the beginning?
Oh, man. Like this whole thing is so enticing to anybody in Canada because our data rates are through the roof. And we don't have a really robust MVNO infrastructure like you guys do in the States. So it's not regulated. And it's not regulated in the States either. But in Canada, there's no incentive for the carriers to give discounts for wholesale wireless rates, so especially on data. So, for example, if our major carrier offers, you know, 1 gigabyte of data for $25, you're not going to find it any cheaper at an MVNO. Whereas, like T-Mobile undercuts its own service with MVNOs all the time because they want to get more users on their network, right? That's their whole goal of increasing its users, whereas in Canada, they go for ARPU, which is average revenue per user. So they don't care how many, they do care, but they don't emphasize the number of people on their network as much as they do the amount of money they're earning per user. So this just would never work because Google just goes in and undercuts everybody and makes them compete, which in Canada, they just don't really do.
Yeah.
So yeah, this looks amazing.
Yep, I'm in.
And if there's a logo, I feel like it's probably. I mean, we're not at Google I/O rumor show yet, which I'm very looking forward to. Our predictions, but if there's a logo out there, it seems. And they've already talked about it at Mobile World Congress. I feel like the stage is kind of set for this, and that will be a big wow. I didn't even think about the car implementation. Just thinking about, because that would be
pretty sweet.
It makes sense, and you're only using it when you're in the car. The data usage probably would be very low. You know, like that's pretty cool.
But, I mean, what seems so cool about this is that basically it seems like it lives inside of an app. So say you have a blank SIM card in your phone, your tablet, your car, or whatever, right? And all you need to do is basically just tap a button to activate the service on one of those devices. And then you never have to switch SIMs. You never have to differentiate between devices. You basically just activate your service on the device that you're using. And eventually, think about sensing, right? You pick up your phone. It knows that you're holding your phone and it activates your service. You pick up your tablet. It does the same thing instantly. And I mean, that to me is just the be all and end all of cellular service, right? Is that you don't have to think about what device you're using. It just works on LTE anywhere you are.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it does sound pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And it could never exist. We'll see.
It could all be fiction.
It could all be fiction, but wouldn't that be great?
An elaborate ruse.
I suppose you never know. I'm sure a lot of these things exist in the Google infrastructure until suddenly they decide, you know, actually that's not going to work, and they can it. But more signs are definitely pointing to this, and I'm very excited to hear more. I hope that we do at Google I/O.
As am I.
Ron Richards, we have an email.
We did get an email. We were talking last week about Amazon, the other A word, Amazon rolling out their Prime Video support for tablets in their app, but it's still being kind of annoying not having Chromecast support. Well, luckily, Paul, also known as Sailor Lion, wrote in and said, I figured out how to Chromecast an Amazon Prime movie from a Nexus 6 phone to a TV. Here are the steps. Download the Amazon App Store app. Download the Amazon Prime app from the Amazon App Store. Enable cast screen on your Nexus 6. Click on the Amazon Prime app, find your favorite TV show or movie, click on play. And yes, this is kind of what we call the analog hole almost in that kind of way. It's not ideal in what you're doing is that basically you're casting your screen, and Jason's got it here on his phone, Brian, if you want to show it. One of the options in the notifications pane is to cast screen. So you can cast whatever's on your screen to a Chromecast.
I'm not connected to a Wi-Fi access point.
Yeah, so if you're watching an Amazon Prime video on your Nexus 6 or on a tablet on my Nexus 9 running Lollipop, I can cast my screen to it. But it's not going to be great because the resolution will be downshifted for the tablet resolution. And so it might be splotchy and that sort of thing. So if you're okay with that, it is a solution, but it's a workaround. It is not the clean implementation of Chromecast that I would prefer to see.
It's a way.
Not a great way.
Any time that I've cast my screen, by the way, from my device on my home network, and I can't tell why this would be what exactly is causing this, but I get little hiccups.
It's not
seamless.
Or like I'll watch.
But some people have no problems, and I don't understand.
I cast my screen from my Chrome browser on my desktop to my Chromecast. That's the easiest way to watch House Hunters. And
you gotta watch House Hunters.
You gotta watch House Hunters. And there are free episodes on HGTV's website, and so I'm not gonna pay for them in the Google Play Store.
Fair enough.
But the video is not smooth because what's happening is that the ideal Chromecast implementation is that you're connecting to the app, and the app is sending the video file via Wi-Fi to the Chromecast, and it is being rendered on the Chromecast and displayed on the TV. This way, what you're doing is the video is coming into the device, rendering on the device, and then being that output is being sent to Chromecast. And so with video, you're going to get lag, you're going to get herky jerk, you're going to get that sort of, you know, that's a technical term, herky jerk.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
page 37 of the
exactly. Yeah, it's not going to be as smooth as native video rendering, but it works.
You know?
And as Drew in the chat room points out, you also won't get 5.1 audio, but I feel as if that ship sailed for the moment you hit cast screen.
That's a bummer, dude.
Yeah, but it's still, it's cool. It's a neat way. So there you go. Thank you, Paul, for writing in with that. But now I'm so excited to tell you about our first sponsor this episode. One of my favorite new products. This episode is brought to you by Little Bits. If you haven't heard of them yet, Little Bits is moving electronics design and creation from the hands of experts to everyone. Little Bits lets everyone use electronics as modular building blocks. Little Bits modules snap together with magnets so you can create circuits in seconds. It's perfect for kids, parents, kids at heart coders, hardware hackers, makers, artists, designers, engineers, and students. With Little Bits, you can get your dog to text or make a robotic snack server, whatever your heart desires. Why buy electronic toys or gadgets when you can invent them? Modules range from the very simple, like power or sensors or LEDs, to the very complex, like wireless and programmable modules. Over 60 modules can be used in virtually limitless combinations. We live in a tech-driven world, but many people don't know how electronics works. Little Bits makes it easy to understand the world around us. Just imagine what you can make and do it. It's a lot like Legos, but with electronics. That's
it really
what I like
is.
About it. I mean, it's kind of the, you know, here, you know, Jason's got his hand. I'm jealous because he gets to play with the modules. I've got to read the copy. But,
he's a noisemaker.
It really taps into that maker environment where it's like, I want to make something that makes an obnoxious piece of noise.
Yeah.
There you go, yeah. And you could do it. It reminds me of when I was a kid, my dad got
me. Will this throw you off, Ron?
Yes, a little bit. My dad got me a great, like, electronics, like, wiring kit from Radio Shack. It was this square box with springs, and if you connected one wire to the other wire, yeah, a light would go on or whatever. This is like the 21st century version of that. If I had kids, I'd be all over this to get them for them.
Yeah,
because it's a great way to introduce them to electronics and also to kind of inspire their creativity. So the base and deluxe kits are a perfect way to get kids excited about learning and playing with electronics. The space kit was developed in partnership with NASA and is a fun educational way to explore Earth and Earth science and space science. The Arduino coding kit introduces kids to programming, which, let me tell you, that's what you want to get your kids in on, the programming, because that's where the money's at.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
And for somebody like you, Jason, for the musician, the synth kit is their modular analog synthesizer.
That's cool.
Novices and experts alike can easily create music using little bits, including oscillators, filters, envelope, keyboard, microsequencers, and speakers. There's so many kits to choose from. So this is what you're going to do. Little Bits is offering new customers $20 off their first kit. Just go to littlebits.com/android, plus free shipping in the U.S., and there you have it. You can have a Little Bits kit of your own, and you can make that noise whenever someone says, okay, Google.
I'll tell you how easy it is to put these together. I disassembled it, put it all back in the box, and then decided, you know what? I'm going to build that again.
Yeah.
And I did. And then, cool. And I'm really happy I did, too, because it is beautiful.
So go to littlebits.com/android, get $20 off their first kit. Get free shipping. Start creating today.
Yeah,
thank you,
I
Little Bits, for
stuff.
Your support.
Oh, it's so cool.
Sounds even better when you're wearing headphones.
Did that? Sorry for everybody listening if that was a little too loud. I heard, Brian, you turned it down. Thank you.
Yeah, I muted you.
Okay, good. Good. I deserve
so
it.
Cool.
I deserved
I'm
it.
I'm taking it.
It is really cool. All right. You go ahead and build
that,
something.
That thing looks amazing.
Yeah. They're a lot of fun. And just, it's so, you know, it's just, it's the quintessential kind of like modular, building blocks.
I think I'm going to get this for my niece for her birthday.
Perfect gift.
She's smart and she needs to learn and she doesn't watch the show, so I didn't spoil it. So there you go.
Is birthday, it okay Amelia. To say that really makes me look forward to Project Ara?
Yes.
Just a little bit more, because that's seriously cool.
Yeah. And I mean, that's exactly it. They're kind of created of similar ethos, you know?
Yeah.
I can't wait for Ara. Ara is going to be so cool.
Yeah. Completely agree. Well, speaking of Ara, that's a great time to check out some hardware. All right. So let's see here. First up, a little startup known as Samsung might finally have a hit on their hands.
Wow.
Man.
I hear the rumblings.
A little startup, you know, they've been trying.
I'm hearing whispers.
Obviously totally joking about the finally. They've been very successful. They are very successful, and they've created a lot of good products. But, man, people are taken by the S6 and the S6 Edge. I just found out that...
We're in the Samsung age.
It's got to be a dad joke in there somewhere. I found out that I'm getting the S6 to review tomorrow, I think. So I'm going to have it for a week and do a review for next week's Before You Buy. So I'm very much looking forward to that, because I hear the camera is just off the charts. But demand for the Edge has outstripped supply, according to industry official. Samsung officials said that Samsung failed to make a precise prediction of the S6 Edge demand, and shortages may continue for the next month as a result. Edge supposedly accounts for 50% of the sales,
wow,
and I would not have guessed that. But I believe it, so, after seeing the Edge. It's a beautiful device.
I think there are two things at play here. One is either the classic case of something that we saw too early and made fun of, and then with the original S5 Edge with the one side edge.
Yeah,
the Note Edge. And then seeing the correct implementation and getting the complete 180, I think,
yes,
you know, like, and it becoming something people want.
Justified.
The other side of it is that oftentimes when they can't meet demand, or they didn't accurately guess the prediction or whatever, did they make enough? Are they creating demand by not having enough inventory? You always got to ask.
There's always that.
There's always that question. Yeah, I don't know. But
although I imagine Samsung would love to sell as many of these quickly as they can, no matter what, as early as possible. Actually, Daniel, you just posted a review of the S6 on Mobile Syrup as well, and it was pretty darn positive, I have to say.
It was. I did an Edge review afterwards, and I said in both reviews that I preferred the S6 proper, but not for any like major reason. It's just that I don't think it's worth $100 for being more beautiful, because it is. I mean, it's definitely a prettier device. Yeah. But there are some downsides, like the fact that the Edge goes a little bit too far down towards the bezel, so it makes it really hard to grip sometimes. And the practical additions of the software additions are just not that good.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They need to do more with those two edges. So if they do manage that, I think the Edge will be a better device in the long run. But I think we should wait till next. I mean, I know it's hard to say, but I'm sure that they're invested in the Edge brand now, as we can tell. So I think next year's Edge is going to have a lot more software to back up the hardware. At least that's what I hope.
I think it's almost interesting, where will the S7 just be an Edge? You know, will the next Galaxy, are we kind of beta testing the Edge as a form factor?
And we're seeing it not doing two next time.
Exactly.
Just picking it and being like, look.
Yep. This is it.
A lot of you really liked it, so this is where we're going.
I mean, we saw them react that way with the Note. You know, listen, a lot of you like it, so we're just going to run with this.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of, if you ask me, the Note is responsible for the Nexus 6, is responsible for the iPhone 6. You know, like that's, mm-hmm. you know, and so are they going to take the momentum with the S6 Edge, and when it comes time to refresh the line, just say this is our form factor?
Right.
It doesn't look like anything else. It goes back to saying how we know that this is what a phone looks like and this is what the shape is. How do you innovate on this?
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to have stumbled on with this as simple as just curving the edges and having it be a interactive display still part of it.
Mm-hmm.
It could be something. So I don't know. I admit I'm tempted. The Edge is neat. If I drop this again, I would think about the Edge.
I would agree with what you're saying, Daniel, as far as the $100 being more of a style upgrade than functional upgrade from what I saw. Having said that, the Note Edge, and you know, I had plenty of experience, plenty of time with the Note Edge when it came out, and it has, you know, some of the implementation, you know, some of the software kind of integrations with the Edge. I didn't find any of those useful. Like I'm almost of the camp of don't over innovate that Edge. Just keep it as like a nice bonus, you know, to the look or something like that. Because I'm not really quite sure if you add very much into that Edge, then most people are going to find a whole lot of value out of it. I suppose it doesn't hurt to do it.
Yep.
I just don't know how many people would do it. And, but that's kind of part of Samsung's DNA. They develop a lot of these extra kind of software features. And while they look great on paper, some people don't find them very useful. Other people, you know, some people do, but...
What about you guys though? Like, would you lean towards the Edge over the regular version if you had the choice?
If I was going to get one, that's a really good question. The Edge is really pretty.
I would go Edge if I could, if it was in stock and available. Even with $100 extra, I would go Edge.
I feel like I kind of have to withhold judgment because I'm about to review the S6 without the Edge.
Yeah.
But my reaction right now would probably be, I thought the Edge was pretty interesting. Is it worth $100 more? That's, I guess, the big question. That's a pretty big price difference for just a style upgrade. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I suppose I'm not answering your question.
You're dodging.
I'm dodging.
Well, we'll listen to the next show.
There we go. The Edge is also the most costly flagship in Samsung's stable. Not surprising to build. It comes in around $290 per unit, $34 higher than the S5 was, still higher than the cost to build an iPhone 6 or 6 Plus. So interesting stuff there.
It's neat. This is what the future looks like. The future is expensive.
The future is now. And it's got curved sides for some reason.
Yeah. You see, even though I would take the Edge, but like I wouldn't want a Samsung phone because of the software and because of the bloatware and because of all that stuff. Like I want the clean, you know,
camera.
The camera is there.
That's really high up on my list.
I suppose I could wipe it and install CyanogenMod.
Or you could just put a launcher on there.
Yeah. Anyway, so, well,
yeah.
another new flagship phone has come under fire recently, the HTC One M9. We've had some differing opinions, some folks liking it, some folks disliking it, but everyone agrees the problem was the camera. It looks as if HTC has tackled that a little bit with a recent software update that has improved the camera performance in a positive way. Our friends over at Fandroid did a shot-for-shot comparison with an M9 before and after the software update. So it looks as if whatever little code magic they did with the software update kind of addressed some of the camera complaints.
Helps. It seems so. On the left is the before, the right is the after, and that one is
that's
like,
noticeable.
The color is very different. Yeah. But on a lot of them, it's pretty much that before there's like a haze to things, and after it's just a little bit sharper and everything. It's amazing what you can do with software.
Can we talk about this for a second?
Yes, please.
I don't like to crap on Fandroid. I like the guys there. They didn't disclose something that's pretty important here. And I know this because I got to test both software versions before and after. The before software, the photos taken on the left were never seen by any Americans because the shipping version for the HTC One M9 actually ships with the newer software. So like day one, I think there was a day one OTA or maybe it shipped with the new version. I don't know, depending on the carrier. But nobody who picked up the phone in the U.S. on the 10th would ever have seen results on the left. Because I reviewed the device. I got a pre-production model in Barcelona at MWC. And the day before the embargo, 2 days before the embargo lifted for the reviews, and I hope I don't get in trouble for saying this, but the embargo lifted and we got to update the phone to this latest version right before the embargo lifted. So everybody who reviewed it at the embargo had to redo their camera photos for the reviews because it was... That like everybody was just like so upset by the camera quality, and then when we got the new version, we're like, oh, okay, now we get it. It was just all in the software. So, and a lot of it just had to do with the auto exposure. As you can see, everything on the left is just overexposed, and it makes everything super hazy. So HTC did a great job fixing those out of the box issues. Mm-hmm. And if you mess with the sharpness and the exposure a little bit on the shipping unit, you can take some fantastic photos with this.
Interesting. Yeah, you see it right there. You see the big difference between the left and the right. So is what you're saying that Fandroid potentially didn't get their device from I'm trying to understand.
So there were two options. There were two possibilities. One is that I'm assuming that the device that they got was a European model. And the European models, I believe, were shipped a little bit earlier. And they had the older software that was then given an OTA update to this 1.32 dot whatever. And that fixed the problem. So I don't know how they got it, but they could have gotten a pre-production unit. There were a few out there. I see the screenshots, though. It looks like it's a Verizon version. So maybe it shipped with the older software and it got updated to the recent one. If so, I apologize. I don't want to assume everybody in the U.S. got the newer version out of the box, but from what I understood, that's what happened.
Gotcha.
Interesting.
Well, I definitely see a little bit of differences in the camera,
and it's good to see that they're responding to pictures. I mean,
HTC is.
Yeah, HTC, and
it's in their best interest.
Yeah, exactly. And who knows where in the supply? I mean, supply chain is very, very difficult, and the phones have got to ship, and so whether the fix happened after stuff shipped and they had to do it with an update or not, it's unfortunate. I mean, it's on one hand, you could say they really screwed up here and it should have shipped with this and it would never have been a problem. That was the one thing that every reviewer seemed to have called out, even though despite getting the update and all that sort of stuff. So, is it enough, now with the software update? I would love to see a comparison of this to an S6. Mm-hmm. I mean, imagine the S6 will blow it out of the water, but it's at least nice to see that they acknowledge it and improved it. So,
sure.
Spoiler, it does.
There you go.
It's true. It's the S6 camera is the best camera on an Android device ever. Period. Yep. Yeah. So you're going to love it. Seriously, the camera on that thing is outstanding.
I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to it because, man, I use my phone as a camera possibly more than pretty much anything else these days. So looking forward to that. LG may have spilled the beans on the G4. Device it's expected to unveil at its media event on April 28th. It prematurely launched. a microsite for the device.
I love it.
Whether that was planned or not is unknown, obviously. The timing of the kind of premature launch of the microsite is pretty convenient, you know, going up against the S6 Edge, the S6 Edge, and the One M9 kind of sales. So it's kind of like, hey, you know, take a look at us. We're coming in a couple of weeks. Don't spend your money yet. Specs on the microsite were actually for the previous model, the G3, but the photos appear to represent a new version of their flagship device, complete with kind of a leather, handcrafted leather backing.
Ooh, not Mock-a-Nile. Mateo,
no, yes, right.
Yeah, no Mock-a-Nile.
Oh, sorry, Mateo. It's actual leather, not Mock-a-Nile. And then actually this kind of... all of this, you know, hardware section of these three devices, which could potentially be kind of the ones of the moment, you know what I mean, as far as big Android devices right now. Daniel, you posted a pretty important article about smartphone updates that might kind of help our viewers and listeners and your readers especially know or pick which phone to buy this year. Can you tell me a little bit about what you were writing about?
Yeah, I mean, I'm stuck. One of my favorite devices ever was the LG Optimus G. And I don't know if it was sold as a different name in the US, but it was basically the first, after the G2X, you know, LG kind of got their act together and they created the Nexus 4. The Optimus G was launched beside it. It was a, you know, a bigger battery. It had, I think, a better camera as well. But they just let the software flounder on Jelly Bean 4.1. And they eventually released, you know, 4.4 like months and months later, but only in Korea. LG, even, I mean, I kind of feel bad because today the T-Mobile and AT&T updated the G2 to Lollipop. So it kind of took some of the wind out of my argument sails. But basically what I'm arguing is just that look how the phone company that you want to invest in treats its older devices. Because, you know, HTC... as critical as we are about the camera, you know that you're going to get the next couple of versions at least for 18 months. They've guaranteed you that. That's in the contract when you buy the phone. The Nexus line, you're also going to get, you know, the latest and greatest for the at least a couple of years. But there are some companies, and especially the cheaper devices from Chinese OEMs like Huawei and Alcatel and ZTE, they just don't update their phones. And it's because it costs a lot of money. And it's expensive to distribute it. It's expensive to talk to the carriers. And they just don't do it. So, you know, check to see, are these updates important to you? And if they are, then go with an OEM like HTC or Sony or increasingly Samsung that reliably updates its devices. So, you know, that's all I'm saying. LG's done a better job, certainly, but they still are relatively slow. Their updates are buggy. And I just don't trust them when it comes to updates yet.
Yeah, it's a really, really good point.
Fair.
At least take it into consideration. Some people aren't going to care as much about that kind of stuff because they just don't notice and it just doesn't matter to them. But
the leather will.
I guarantee you, the people that watch the show and that read Mobile Syrup and, you know, are fans of Android, this stuff does matter. And the history is really easy to judge upon. So it's a really great point. Bleak in the chat room was saying, you know, HTC, the M7, here we are two years later and still getting updates. So, HTC is kind of proving, you know, that at least they have that.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Thank you.
Very good stuff. But, let's move into some hardware. Watch, wait for it. Oh,
yes!
There it is. Oh, look at that.
We never know, but you know what? Brian's on it.
So clever. So clever. Jeff Kosmicki. A couple of bits of hardware news for your Android Wear faithful. Google unveiled a number of new watch band options from E3 Supply, Worn and Wound, and Clockwork Synergy. So if you're looking for a new watch band, you've got some more options. So there you go.
That was news week. That was timed, actually. That I believe that came out the day that the embargo lifted on Apple Watch reviews. Right. So it was like, hey, we're over here with bands.
We've got bands. Look, it's cool. We got colors. Look
a lot of them.
But what is even more interesting and a bit of a surprise is that Google's supposedly working on a companion app that would enable Android Wear devices to work with the iPhone. Included would be support for notifications, Google Now cards, voice search, and voice actions. That is, of course, if Apple will allow it. Mm-hmm. So interesting that there's a segment of Google that that wants to play on the in the iOS world. I didn't think they'd go that far.
I'm not surprised at all, to be honest. Yeah. Because Google, you know, some of the better... I've heard plenty of people say that the Google apps on iOS are actually really great.
Yeah.
And so Google takes iOS seriously.
Yeah.
I think the bigger question is, will Apple be cool with it? You know,
that's
so
the
we're right
question.
On the heels of Apple Watch hitting people's hands, literally. So
we'll be keeping up. Maybe this will be an I.O. thing that they unveil. Who knows? But finally, if you've been on the fence for a Moto 360, now might be the great time as Motorola dropped the price by $85 to $165. It could be that a new version's coming out, Moto 362. Who knows? We'll see. Time will tell. If you prefer the metal-banded Moto 360, you can get that now for $229. So price drop there as well, too. So
I think it's a great price.
Yeah. It's all right. $165 is pretty decent. I mean, it's a great watch. I'm jealous.
I'll be really speaking of updates, I'll be really curious to see how long the smartwatches will get updates for wear. Because it's not a carrier block. You know, and
right.
I wonder how difficult it is to update, especially because it's a tight ship. Like, you know, there isn't a whole lot of customization, if at all.
Right.
There isn't, actually. Google, you know, kind of controls
the
side of things.
And what the hardware limitations will be on the older devices.
Right. I think that's probably the bigger issue.
Yeah.
But so, you know, you could very conceivably get a Moto 360 that is 6 or 8, I can't remember how old it is at this point, right now, and have that still work very well for you for the next however many years, and that's a great price to get in.
Yeah, we haven't really figured out the obsolescence rate of these watches yet.
We haven't.
I'm not noticing any battery discharge problems on this. I can pretty much on a full charge get about 2 days out of it, which I think is great.
Mm-hmm.
2 days
is good.
Yeah.
I can't go 2 days with mine. Are you watching?
I'm wearing a regular watch right now.
Oh, you're one of those.
I heard about those in history class. Tell me more.
Well, I can tell that it's almost 9:30 in Canada land, and that's all I really need to know.
All right, fair enough.
I have 4 Android Wear watches and a number of other watches lying on my table here that I never pick up, largely because I just don't find... I've given up on Android Wear, to be honest, for the time being. Just I don't find it particularly useful. I think notifications are the biggest improvement to my life, but I get so many of them, and I prefer to use my phone for that. And the app experience on the Android Wear platform just isn't quite as robust as it needs to be in order to take my attention away from my phone. I know I'm speaking in, you know, heretically right now, but I look forward to the time when Android Wear has progressed to the point where I can reliably do more than just use it for notification triage, because that lost its sort of like mystique really quickly for me.
Hmm.
I don't know. Has that happened to you guys? Like, do you guys just see too many notifications? Or is it like, I can't deal with this?
Yeah, you definitely need to manage your notifications. You run, if you leave everything as is default, you run the risk of getting over notified.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't run into that because I already manage it on the app level. Like, Twitter's great, but I don't need to be notified every time something happens. So I just mm-hmm. I've already turned those off. I don't get any Twitter notifications. I look at it when I want to look at it. Really, the only notifications that I get now are text messages, which are the most immediate. And you're right, it's that triage,
mm-hmm.
You know, where I'm standing on BART and I feel the buzz and I look at it and then I decide if I want to take my phone off and respond or respond when I get off the train. I mean, that's pretty much what it's boiled down to.
Yeah. Right.
You know, there has yet to be the killer app. Like, if I stop wearing this tomorrow, I don't think my life would be impacted in any way.
Yeah, I mean, there are days where I forget to put the watch on, or I didn't charge it last night, and you know, big whoop, I don't wear it for a day, and I kind of miss it. But I'm totally at the point now where I wear it pretty much every single day, and have for months. And yeah, I do miss having the notifications on my wrist, only because if it's buzzing there, like the way I just default use it, and I don't mean to do this, I think it's just kind of my habits, but I don't get really, you know, buzzed on my wrist very often unless it's something important like a text message or an email or whatever, and I like being able to just go, okay, and that's it.
Yeah.
Instead of having to dig out my phone.
The big challenge is that if you didn't charge the watch and you didn't wear it for a day, compared to if you didn't charge your phone, you left your phone on the nightstand for a day. Could you get by without the phone?
That would be a lot harder. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
which is not the thing. Sorry, the thing is, like, when you're in public and you keep checking your wrist, do you ever get people going, what are you doing? Like, why are you being so rude right now? Why are you checking your wrist?
No, I know that's, that's been the argument, like, in a meeting format. The idea, like when you're sitting in a meeting with folks in a business meeting and you keep checking your watch, that's a subtle suggestion to the people in the meeting that you're bored and you're waiting for the meeting to end.
Right, right. But the other side to this is you don't have to check it.
Exactly.
Like, just because it's buzzing on my wrist, and I've gotten very good at that. Yeah. I don't check it if I'm in a situation like that. I just, okay, good to know. That just buzzed. Next time there's an open opportunity, you know, I can do that thing or whatever. Yeah. But definitely. That comes down to more of an etiquette, I think, thing than anything.
Let me guess. You have a bowl of beautiful, delicious M&Ms sitting in front of you. You're able to just take, like, two of them and feel satisfied, right?
I don't like M&Ms. I don't appreciate because your tone.
There's no way I could do that.
Really? Yeah. So you feel the buzz and you have to check it like right now.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I get FOMO, right? Like I get this feeling of like, okay, well, something's happening somewhere and I need to figure out.
I need to be involved. Yeah.
I'm a very curious person. I need to know what's going on around me all the time. And I just feel like having that buzz on my wrist is just another area that I need to be on top of.
Yeah.
So the simplicity of having a smartphone and having it just be the one place that I can focus my attention, even if it's the entirety of my attention, feels like a better use of my time.
Right. No, and I would agree with that too. It can be a distraction for sure.
And I will admit that I've gotten frustrated even by the notification interaction where I'll get the buzz, I'll look at it, and then I'll pull my phone out to respond. Like, it feels like I've added a step.
Yes,
I know. Right. It's just like, is this really helpful? Yes. Or so, because more often than not, I don't get a lot of text I don't need to respond to. So I don't know.
But you don't use your voice to reply?
When I'm in the car alone, that's the only time I've done it, is when I'm driving and when I'm alone.
Walking.
Listen, San Francisco, there's enough crazy people talking to themselves. I could probably get by with doing it. But so.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't worry. In like a couple of weeks, everybody's going to be talking to themselves or talking to their wrists. So don't worry about it. Geez. I wouldn't worry about it at all. All right. Let's take a minute and thank another of our sponsors. And I love this sponsor because it means I get to eat lots of delicious food. Nature Box. Right now, at Nature Box, you can get a trial of their favorite snacks and just pay $2 for shipping. That's it. You get a box full of snacks for $2. You know you're going to snack. And when you do, you want it to be worth it. Something that's tasty, something that's satisfying. It doesn't make you feel guilty afterwards. What you need are snacks from Nature Box. You can choose from over 100 healthy and crave-worthy options to be delivered right to your door. All their snacks are made with zero artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners, 0 grams trans fats, no high fructose corn syrup. And best of all, they're awesome. They taste amazing. They're so good and so much better for you than, you know, grabbing a lot of the other snack options out there. You can get the jalapeno white cheddar popcorn, carrots, strawberry fruit chews. I'm convinced there's a dude or a lady on their staff and their entire full-time job is coming up with awesome names for their food.
Because
the names are like make you salivate. They're delicious. Get smart about snacking. Personally, I picked up a box for home. I brought it home. The snacks were gone, like in no time flat, a couple of days. My daughter loved the lemon tea biscuits. She couldn't stop eating those. I actually had to like interfere and eat a bunch, you know, like grab a handful because she was just going to do the whole thing. Blueberry almonds. I couldn't stop eating the Italian bistro pretzels. The warning, garlic breath. But that's just a sign of how delicious they are.
That's always a good sign.
Excellent trees. We have some here. I'm surprised, Ron, that you're looking at them you're not eating them.
I've been holding back. I don't want to step on your stuff. But we got some blueberry Greek yogurt pretzels.
Sounds very good.
We got some fancy dried figs.
Fancy.
We've got some Big Island pineapple, which is dried pineapple rings, which is one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. You got the Sriracha Pop Pops.
Pops.
Sriracha-flavored popcorn kernels.
And cherry vanilla. This would be good in the morning.
I'm going to dive into some pineapple, so you can.
There we go. All right. You eat. I'm going to read. Right now, if you go to naturebox.com/twit, you can eat too. You can get a trial of their favorite snacks delivered to your door. So what are you waiting for? Go to naturebox.com/twit. Start your trial today. And we thank NatureBox for their support of All About Android and for feeding us.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. Remember last time they sponsored and I ate like the whole bag of that thing?
I'm going to take this home with me.
It was great.
I don't know if this box belongs to somebody, but I'm going to take that home.
Nature Box is good stuff.
I'm frantically checking if they ship to Canada.
Don't. It's good stuff. Check it out. NatureBox.com/twit. All right. Hey, a couple of things to talk about in the app world. Let's do it.
I needed to finish eating my dried pineapple ring before I talked about Snapseed. So after 2 years of dormancy, Google finally updated Snapseed to version 2.0 with all new material design, of course, and some formerly premium features are now free as well. And if you don't remember what Snapseed was, it was a really pretty cool image editor that Google acquired. Did they? Yeah, they acquired it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was from an acquisition.
They did.
And then kind of went away. Well, not went away, just didn't, it kind of lingered, but it's pretty cool to see it back, and Jason's got it here on his phone, we can take a look at it.
I was going to try and take a picture with the camera, but anyways, you got the, but it wouldn't let me, you got the floating action button.
Floating,
I know, Daniel, you actually wrote about this as well. Yeah, totally different.
I love this. Layout. I love it. It's so good. It's so powerful. It's basically like having Adobe Lightroom on your phone. And I'm one of those people who downloads every photography app I can because I love taking photos on my phone. It is so powerful. It'll get you the right result. It's free. Like, it's so good and so, like, so right priced. I mean, everybody should have access to a really robust, photography editing app. And this just works. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they integrate this exact thing into a future version of Android. It's just that good.
Yeah, because they kind of did that, right? Into the editing tools and in the Photos app, a lot of the old Snapseed features ended up getting rolled into there just kind of as a default.
Totally.
I never really think to use the editing features.
I can't be bothered, to be honest with you. I mean, it's the kind of thing where I'm a big fan of Photoshop on the desktop, but I've never really gleaned to doing image editing on the phone, but I'm not a big photographer person. So I think it's really cool, and I think those options, and you just made a really cool photo of your daughter, but...
Yeah, you know. Yeah. Let me do.
It's neat. Hey,
she is
free.
Really cute.
Thanks.
Yeah. The glasses.
I think so.
The glasses are, that's a nice touch.
Thanks.
Sunglasses.
Easter Bunny got those for her.
Thank you. Thank you, Easter Bunny.
Yeah, the Easter Bunny is hip, I got to say. cool. So that's it. Snapseed version 2. Check it out for yourself. Another thing that I'm excited about, I don't know about anybody else, but I was one of those people.
CalendarGate.
I know. Yes, it totally was. It totally is a gate, isn't it? I was one of those people that kind of complained when suddenly Calendar was updated. Not because I didn't like the update, but because they got rid of month view. And now, ladies and gentlemen,
dun-dun-dun.
I can use this to keep me organized.
That's organization right there, folks.
Yes. Finally. Pretty much.
I feel like we could have used the drama bumper. We could have used the All About Android drama bumper with CalendarGate there. I feel like we dropped the ball there. But
that's all right. That's all right. Calendar does bring month view.
Finally.
I use it. I actually use it. Even though everything's a little small and whatever, it's handy to me.
Oh, no, I like looking a zoom out.
Yeah.
You know, like, and sometimes you need to look at the month view, you know,
I had a lot of things showing right there,
right.
Obviously.
And you don't necessarily need all the things that are on each day, but sometimes you want to know how many, like, okay, in 3 weekends from now or whatever, you know, like that month view is a key view. And I think it was kind of a miss that they didn't have it. So I'm glad it's back.
To be honest, Twit company info, the calendar adds like a million entries on my calendar. So if I remove that,
but they're useful
things
entries.
Look a little bit better, right?
Nice.
Right?
Manageable.
Yeah, that's usable. So there you go. And hey, floating action icon or floating action button. Yay. I'm very happy. Let's see here. We have.
I want to use the bumper more. We need to find more sources
of drama.
Yeah.
I forget that we have all my Android
drama.
It's
really good. It's really good. That'll just a little stinger at the end to remind you of it.
I don't use it very often, so I wasn't ready for it.
It's okay. It's okay. I didn't prep you for it either. Next time there's drama, I'll be there. Alexander Hart wrote in to aaa@twit.tv with an email. He said, I was wondering if you've heard this. It appears the official GitHub Android app is dead in the water. I'm a developer, and I was looking to contribute to the code on GitHub at github.com/github/Android. That's where I discovered that the application hasn't been released to the Google Play Store in over a year. It turns out the community has been in contact with Kevin at GitHub, who confirmed that the company is instead focusing on mobile web instead of mobile applications. And Kevin says the community is still happily developing the application, but there's no one at GitHub to publish the code to the Google Play Store. Granted, I'll admit that the current application doesn't provide anything a mobile web version couldn't. Still, it's sad that GitHub doesn't see the value that could be added by mobile applications such as notification support and widgets, and still sadder in their decision to let the app linger in unsupported instead of putting it to rest with an official announcement. I thought this email was kind of interesting from the perspective of, are standalone apps necessary if mobile apps do the trick?
Where is the line where you need an app versus where you can use the mobile web?
Right. Like, if creating an app creates a lot of overhead for a company like, you know, for an organization like GitHub or whatever, is a mobile web version okay?
Right. Well, I think it's interesting, too, with the nature of application that GitHub is. And for those who don't know, GitHub is basically it's like a public code repository. Where you can store your own code, you can interact with other people's code and all this sort of stuff. And so it's interesting to see, like, because when I thought, I'm like, oh, GitHub is an Android app? Like, that was my immediate thought, was that's kind of heavy to pull into a mobile app kind of view. But of course, there's interactions and things like that you can do via the website. And if they choose the direction to focus in the mobile web, I mean, they know their application and they know what they're doing with it better than anyone else. So,
yeah. Right.
But it's tough. This goes back to when the iPhone came out and there were going to be no apps. So everything was going to be mobile web-based. And remember, we heralded HTML5 would make everything easy and
that's
it would
right.
be great. But for some reason, we've got these apps. And now we have iOS apps. We have Android apps. And people want app development and they want self-contained apps. But how many apps are just web views inside of an app wrapper?
Right, a lot of them. Yeah.
So
a lot of them.
I don't know.
I find this question interesting also because Lollipop really – no longer distinguishes between a web view and a native app, right? They give they give each web tab through Chrome its own process and its own view. And in doing so, they could essentially trick the system essentially into thinking that it's a native app, right?
Right.
And as you said, like back in 2007, 2008, the phones weren't nearly as powerful as they are today. And the overhead for HTML5 has also gone down substantially because the code itself has gotten a lot slimmer and it can now talk to native processes like the camera and other things that HTML5 in 2007 could never even dream of. So, you know, you can emulate a native sort of feeling in a web browser today. And things like WebRTC allow you to do video conferencing in a browser. I mean, these are all standards that Google is pushing. And it's not surprising to me that GitHub gave up on its Android app, especially because they are trying to be as sort of platform neutral as possible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is only sort of related here. Well, I mean, it's related in the sense that I was always kind of bummed that there was no like easy tech meme app or anything like
right.
that. And then, you know, I mean, and same for APK Mirror. Yep. I was like, okay, well then I'll just send the icon to the home screen of the web page. It works just like an app. I mean, you know, it's in a browser, obviously, but it does the same thing. You wouldn't know from the home screen. I can just tap the icon, go right to APK Mirror, and like you said, in Lollipop, it ends up being in my recents as a process that's easy to get to. There's tech meme I can hop
Every tab is its own task.
So. So I think
with
those
3 gigs of RAM, you're not going to have to reload it every time you open it.
Yep. So there we go. But definitely, thank you for writing in, Alexander. I hope that kind of answers or gives a little bit of perspective as far as why. The loss of things like notifications, that's kind of a bummer. I do wonder if at some point there will be some sort of way to tie in notifications to web apps like that. And I'm sure
there are. I think in the latest Chrome build, Google allows web developers to push notifications to your phone. I think there was an Android Police article about it a few weeks ago, if you want to look it up.
Interesting. Did we talk about this on the show? Yeah, this seems vaguely
did
familiar.
We?
I don't know if we talked about it, but I remember reading it. But
okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone in the chat will
pass
that along.
How fast can he bring back that clip?
Right, yeah.
Not that good.
Oh, it's okay, Brian. It's okay. Well, see, there you go. See, problem solved. Now GitHub
somebody
just
in the
has
chat,
to do it.
Sorry, just wrote, he posted Git Skyrios for GitHub. So it seems that there's a material design GitHub repository app created by a third-party person. So.
And once again, that shows where there's a void, someone will come in and fill it. It might not be the official app, but I'm not surprised to think that somebody's already developed one and now Git Skyrios for GitHub exists and you can get it.
Git Skyrios, GitSkarios, for audio listeners that want to look it up. I've added it to our show notes, so you can find that on our show page, twit.tv/AAA, after the show's done. We link to all of the information in our show notes, so you can always find the stuff. There it is, Git Skyrios for GitHub. So, hey, there are options. Excellent. And then JJ posts...
Whoa, double whammy. Well, yeah, go with JJ.
What?
Well,
double whammy?
Yeah, bottom one. Yeah.
Okay, I see. This is we're on the same page.
Yeah.
Chrome version 42 will be the last release for Android 4.0 Ice Cream Sandwich. Is this the one that he's talking about? No, that's wrong. Yeah, that's not the one we're talking about. Whatever. But chat room is still very smart, and I'm sure
cousin of John in the chat room responded and says you can even vibrate from the browser with the line of code as well there, navigator.vibrate. Open parentheses, close parentheses. So they're building all these hooks to work, you know, from that web view. I think at some point the line between apps and just web applications will go away, and it will just be these are these things that you use on your phone, and how we interact with them will be different. But yeah, it's definitely going in that direction, at least on Android. So.
Cool stuff. Hey, let's take some time to thank the final sponsor of today's episode. And I gotta say, I had a lot of fun with Blue Apron. We love to eat. It's hard to find a meal that doesn't compromise somewhere.
Who doesn't love to eat? I love to eat too.
And you know, in our house, we build our week's kind of meals around recipes. We buy the appropriate ingredients. We put it all together. Good value, quick to prepare, healthy and delicious. That's where Blue Apron comes into the equation. Blue Apron makes cooking delicious meals easy and fun by delivering fresh, ready-to-cook meals right to your door. You can see right here, this is footage that I taped of my Blue Apron box, unboxing the box. You get this box with like frozen, kind of huge blocks of frozen ice underneath, so it keeps everything cool and fresh. And it's just filled with these ingredients, and they're all wrapped up so you know what goes to what. For less than $10 per meal, Blue Apron sends these ingredients perfectly proportioned with step-by-step recipes, instructions, including beautifully printed pictures that show you what it's going to look like when you're done. And they are faithful and shows you all the ingredients kind of spaced out so you know what to grab from the fridge for each recipe. And yeah, it's like a cooking school that's sent to your door, essentially. So whether you are used to cooking by recipe or whether you're not, you're going to learn how to do it here because they make it easy. They give you the proportions of all the food, and it's delicious. You know, you're not taking a trip to the grocery store. You're not building these recipes, you know, the ingredients that you need to pick up from scratch based on a recipe you found in a magazine. They're taking care of it. One thing that I actually really love about Blue Apron is it brings a little bit of variety to our dinner table. You know, we get stuck in a rut and we make the same things over and over again. Blue Apron is a way to kind of almost force yourself to think outside the box and create new meals that the whole family can enjoy. And, you know, it's like restaurant-style meals.
What I love is the setting the right amount of ingredients, because I can't tell you how many times I go to the grocery store. I'm going to make dinner, and I walk away with $75 worth of groceries, and I know I'm not optimizing my purchase. You know, I'm buying way more than I need to. Because you can't just get one garlic clove. You need to get a whole pack of them.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So. I mean, they make it dead simple. It's super easy to use. Each balanced meal is 500 to 700 calories per serving. They have kid-friendly options. You can buy for two people. You can buy for, you know, four people. I actually bought we actually bought for our family a meal this month, or a box for this month for the four of us, and then a box for next month for the four of us. I'm telling you, we love it. That's the family plan that you're looking at right now. And they kind of tailor the family meals a little bit more for like the whole family. You know, they're not going to put in some crazy ingredients that maybe kids are going to look at and go, oh, I don't want that.
And you can specify dietary restrictions, right? You can say, I'm allergic to this. So don't do that.
Dietary preferences. They work around your schedule. Blue Apron's expert sources only use the best seasonal ingredients for these meals. Obviously, what we made out of our first box, the tilapia, the lamb and beef shawarma, which was just off the hook. Cool. It was so good. And then the crispy chicken thighs with kimchi and mushrooms.
Which is pretty cool because this crispy chicken thighs recipe is created with Mai Lin, who is a chef on Top Chef.
That's right.
So they got a little celebrity chef action going on.
We watched the season finale, and she won. She ended up winning. We watched the season finale, and then we opened the box like a couple of days later, and I was like, oh, cool. We get to eat the food that she created.
She knows what she's doing. That's awesome.
You'll cook incredible meals. You'll be blown away by the quality and the freshness. So here's what you can do. This is Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Check out this week's menu and get your first two meals free. Free food. First two meals free. Go to blueapron.com/twit. That's right. Two free meals just for going to blueapron.com/twit. And I will tell you, when we signed up for Blue Apron at our house, I forgot to tell my wife to go to this URL. So we didn't get the two free meals, but that's okay because it's delicious and we're happy to get the boxes that we're going to get. So really looking forward to it. We thank Blue Apron for their support of All About Android. I highly recommend you check it out. It's like a learning how to cook in a box that's delivered to your step. It's really cool. Thank you, Blue Apron.
I'm hungry now.
I know. That's the problem. Yeah. You do this ad read and you're
just
hungry.
Effective. It's an effective ad read. I could go for some crispy chicken thighs.
It looks good. Could I just eat this and get the same?
Well, I mean, it won't be the same nutritional value. That's for sure. You could eat it. Why not have something from NatureBox instead?
Oh, that's duh. Yes. We've got many options today. All right. Hey, let's get into the arena.
Oh, many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
All right, last week's episode 208. Wow, 208.
I called it. Automate ran with it.
71%.
Wow.
It's a big number.
And it was neck and neck between Stream and Pocket.
Yeah.
Looks like Pocket edged just ahead today.
Interesting. Interesting. Yep. Interesting for an app that has like a pretty old design Pocket.
Yeah, but it's effective. It works.
But exactly.
And I underestimated how much people want to stream live video in our audience. I guess they're not big with the Meerkat crowd or whatnot. So there you go.
We'll see what happens when Meerkat and Periscope hit
Android. Hit Android, if ever.
That might change things.
I will like to note, thanks to Wade County in the chat room, that through week 14, guests are currently in at 3 wins. I've got 5 wins, and Jason's in the lead with 6 wins.
Yes.
I closed that gap a couple of weeks ago.
You did. You were way behind.
Yeah, and nice little run. So let's see if I can get back on it. Do I go first today?
That would be the case. Yes, you do go first.
Would be the case. Well, once again, I love finding a great, well-designed app that does one thing and does one thing well. And it also enables you to be connected no matter where you are. A lot of folks, whether traveling abroad or even just traveling domestically, a lot of folks depend on Wi-Fi for their smartphones or tablet devices. My tablet, my Nexus 9, is Wi-Fi only. I don't have LTE or anything on it. So if I want to use this in public, I need to find an access point to use it. This app is called WeMan, free Wi-Fi. And basically what it is it's a great way to find a Wi-Fi access point, no matter where you are. So did I just trigger?
You probably the past minute has been transcribing on my watch, and I've just been letting it go.
Okay, so
it's fun.
So WeMan, basically, as the tutorial says, it becomes your new Wi-Fi manager, so you can discover the best Wi-Fi networks around you with just a tap. It plugs into millions of free Wi-Fi hotspots. And you can actually participate in the community. So they do ask you to sign. You don't have to, but you could sign in to create an account if you wanted to. But I'm going to turn Wi-Fi on here. And what is it
WeMan or WiMan?
I'm going to say WiMan because I think WeMan is the guy from Jackass on MTV. WeMan,
right. You might be right. Yep. And Wi-Fi, WiMan.
So, so coming up with no networks, but if I go to – where is it? There we go. Okay, so on the map side, it's going to show me A green dot is verified network. That means that this is a Wi-Fi network that someone within the Wiiman or Wiiman community has verified works and is good. A purple one requires sign-in, and a gray one is not tested. And now, unfortunately, we're in a place where there's not much Wi-Fi. But you can see that I've got Xfinity Wi-Fi. It's all location-based, so it's going to tell you where things are. So, for example, Reese BC Guest is the Wi-Fi at the restaurant Reese BC a couple blocks away from here.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. And as you zoom out, you can see more and more Wi-Fi. So here's one that requires login. It's Xfinity. That's Comcast's, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you, in San Francisco, this lights up like a Christmas tree.
Oh, I'm sure.
And in other cities, whether it's London or New York or whatever, as more and more people do it, they're identifying these are free access points. These are ones that we can confirm that will work and make it easy for you to connect to it. Now, what's even further and what's even also interesting is that you can set up here, and I don't have any set up right now, but you can set up your own network. So what can happen is that if you have your own Wi-Fi network in your home or in a business, if you work in a coffee shop, you can connect it to Wiiman or Wiiman and offer it to free of charge to other Wiiman users. It's verified. You can manage it. You can use Wiiman. They've got tools that allow you to. And Brian, I don't know if you've got the Google Play Store page up there, but there's screenshots. But there are tools that show you bandwidth usage. And so for a Wi-Fi access point that you own and manage and you verify, you can see how much data is used per day. You can, you know, kind of gives you a little more insight into using it. So I'll show you how many people are connected to it, that sort of thing. So it's pretty dang powerful and really, really helpful and really kind of easy to use. It's got great use of material design. And another great thing, which I don't want to forget, is that you can download city maps to an offline state. So, of course, you're not connected. And so if you're going somewhere and you don't know where there's Wi-Fi, I can say, okay, I know I'm going to London. Let me download the map of known access points, and I can pull that up. I can go nearer to one and hopefully connect to it. So if you're dependent on Wi-Fi and you're dependent on public and free-to-use Wi-Fi access points, and there are many, many more than you might realize, check out Wiiman Free Wi-Fi. It's free in the Google Play Store, and it's a handy tool. Material design. Look at that action button. Yeah,
so it does things when you tap it.
It does. So, yeah.
Type the city. Love it.
Yeah, it's cool.
And you know, be careful about the Wi-Fi hotspot that you jump on. Maybe use a VPN when you do that.
Yeah, I mean, be safe. Use your own. Be safe. Yeah, be out there.
Yeah,
but.
Okay, cool. So that is Wiiman Free Wi-Fi. Was it rude that I just looked at my watch when it buzzed?
Listen, Jason, we're almost at the end, all right?
Jeez, what, are we going long? Let's see here. Okay, so Wiiman Free Wi-Fi. Daniel, you picked an app that I was considering for tonight.
Ha!
Good work.
Got it.
Yes.
Good work. You got it.
Although I did set it to you like 3 hours ago, so you could have scooped it.
You could have, yeah. I could have, but you know.
But you're a gentleman. You're a gentleman and a scholar and a dad, so you wouldn't do that.
Well, it is yours, and yeah, I like it. I'll show it off while you talk about it.
All right, sweet. So yeah, this is something that I found just sort of roaming around the Play Store a few weeks ago. The Play Store doesn't have a great discovery section, but this is called Fuse, and F-Y-U-S-E. And it's basically a photography app with a twist. It's got this sort of dimensional element in it that takes advantage of the fact that all of most phones, this requires Android 4.3, most phones have accelerometers, gyroscopes, and a bunch of other sensors in it that allow you to record both left and right, but also depth. So what you see there is that you're taking this sort of video of that canister, and it's actually recording the dimensions of that canister. And while you're moving your screen around, it is moving the fuse with it, and it gives you a sense of a sort of a video, but also a static image because you're manipulating it in real time. It's super cool, and it's even more enjoyable to actually capture these fuses and try to experiment with it, because not only can you do it left and right, you can do it up and down. You can make it a full 360 image. You can trim it. It's got its own social element to it. So you can check other people's fuses out and try to get inspiration from them. It sort of combines, I don't know if you guys ever used it, it's called Flixel, but it uses this sort of a cinemagraph model where like only part of the image would be animated. You could check off how much of the image you wanted to animate. That would give you the sort of hybrid photo video thing going on. So yeah, you can see you're moving your hand and it's moving with it. And it uses the accelerometer and gyroscope in the phone, if it has it, to give you a better sense of the depth and dimension to it. This is in beta right now on Android. It's a little bit slicker on iPhone. It runs a whole lot faster on iOS than it does on Android, like most photography apps do at first, like Vine did back when it came out on Android. But it's progressing pretty fast, and it's being updated almost every day. So yeah, that one's really cool. If you take a look at it on the video feed. Yeah. And that captures a lot of information just from a short twist of the hand. So I see this being used if people are getting bored of Instagram, they want to find a new way to challenge themselves in terms of photography, if they want to play with video, but they don't want to really mess with like editing a video. This is a really cool way of finding a new way of expressing yourself. And Android 4.3 is on, you know, most devices these days. Oh, we may get
there's some.
Well, hold on. Let's
spruce up ladies on here.
Didn't see that.
Let's see here. What I was checking out was,
is there a bookmark function? That's what I want.
there was Coachella. There were a bunch of Coachella ones that were kind of interesting.
Cool. Well,
geez, there's a lot of ladies on here. But we're interesting from, you know, like a being in the crowd perspective. My goodness, what is going on here? There's a lot of
Fashion.
Let's call it fashion.
A lot of fashion.
Even though this is being used as a social network, I see this honestly being used as a marketing tool by a lot of companies.
That's cool.
There's no audio component just yet because that would be kind of choppy. But eventually, if they do add an audio component, it could work, I guess. You may be able to add your own sort of soundtrack to these fuses. But I do think like they've partnered up with Katy Perry and a couple of other celebrities to promote the app. And I think that it will eventually be used as a combination of a social network and a marketing tool. But the technology is really what's so impressive to me, mm-hmm. is that you can do this all with the tool you have in front of you, which is your phone.
That's pretty neat right there. Kind of like in the middle of the crowd, you know?
Yeah, that's super cool. It definitely captures an atmosphere that a static photo can't.
Yeah. I mean, we're seeing so much movement right now with this idea of put me in an experience in some way, shape, or form. You know, this is a great way to kind of put yourself into an experience in more of a, not a three-dimensional way, but more of an immersive way in just a single photograph. There's the 360-degree cameras that we're seeing more and more of, and especially with the kind of the uprising of VR right now, this is becoming such a big deal. This is a great way to get it on your phone right now in an interesting way. It's not quite 3D necessarily, but it's a cool way to capture an environment.
Actually, you mentioning VR makes a good point that this could be a really good use for cardboard. If they do optimize it for cardboard, I think that could be really neat.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Yeah, no, this is a great app. Great pick. And it's kind of its own social network, as pretty much every app is these days, especially photo apps.
Well, community emerges from the creation. So that's pretty
exactly.
Cool.
Yeah. So you can echo, you know, a post if you want to kind of spread it along. There's comments. I'm afraid to scroll around here. Never know what you're going to find. But anyways, yes, very cool stuff. Here, I'll go in here real quick. That's mine outside of the twit. This is like me just testing it when I first installed it a couple of days ago. Not that big a deal. But anyways, cool stuff. It's called Fuse, F-Y-U-S-E. That's how you spell that. And check it out. It's free. All right. I've got to follow these two apps up. You guys hit it hard this week.
Challenge, yeah. Some good ones. Let's see what you got.
Okay. This one's been out for a little while. I'm sure you've heard of If This Then That. This is a breakout app from If This Then That's team. They did a bunch of breakout apps that I just didn't really consider, I don't know why, but they came out and I was like, oh yeah, I don't, you know, whatever. I read about it. It didn't capture my attention.
It was like a, barrage. It was like,
it's like three of them. There's do button, there's do camera, and do note.
Right.
And for some reason, it didn't capture my attention. I will admit that earlier today, Andy Anako on MacBreak Weekly showed off do camera. Yeah. And in showing it off, he made me realize how kind of cool it is. Yeah. It's pretty neat. So if this then that allows you, just taking a step back for a second, if this then that is kind of like, it's kind of like Tasker or some of these other apps that allow you to create conditions, and then if that condition is met, this thing happens. If this then that is a little different in that it introduces recipes into the mix, which is basically an easy way to share some of these conditions and just share them out there and say, hey, you know, I've got this recipe for posting to Gmail when blah de blah happens, and I can add it to my if this and that, whatever.
It's almost simple programming,
yeah.
You know, for those who don't know how to program, you know.
Like, right. Yeah. So what this is, the one that I chose was Do Button. Do Button is one of the three Do apps. And what's cool about this is basically you get three slots. And I would imagine that as you start to use this more, you might want more than just three. Three might be kind of limiting. And I saw a lot of comments to that effect, like, give me more, give me unlimited. But the cool thing is you can add up to three slots in these recipes. I have, let's see here. One of them is get yourself out of an awkward situation. Oh, man, this show is really awkward. I'm just going to hit my button and I'm just going to wait and do-to-do. So anyways, we're talking and no big deal. Oh, hey, I've got a phone call. I'm sorry, I can't do this show anymore. I got to go, you guys. Okay, see, I just got myself out of an awkward situation.
And you pray to God that the person you're with doesn't see the very large text that says, get yourself out of an awkward situation.
What are you talking about? This is the kind of...
On your enormous phone.
Now, you know, I have to say, I haven't tested this, but this screams Android Wear. You need a big button. That's what you need. Anyways, they need to do that.
Yeah.
Get on that if this and that. But it's cool. So that was a recipe that I downloaded. There's a block off the next hour. Is do not disturb. Suddenly you find yourself really busy, go ahead and tap that, and it basically syncs into a calendar. I didn't tap it hard enough, apparently. You know, when I set this up, I chose a calendar in my Google calendar for it to do this to, and so now if I check my personal calendar, it's going to have the next hour blocked off as do not disturb automatically. All I had to do was think about something that I'm going, that I would love to have a button for, basically, and assign it. So we'll go into this third slot here, and they have a bunch that you can kind of pick from to begin with. Do essentials, get an email with your current location, send an email to someone that says, on my way home, and, you know, letting them know. So every day when you leave work or whatever and you're driving home, you just tap that instead of having to open up the thing. And
yeah, it's a way to minimize those steps of routine kind of things.
Things that you do often. A lot of integration potentially here with home automation. So toggle a Wemo switch, you know, toggle your lights on or off.
I saw Hue integration. If you scroll up, yeah, that was cool. Nest integration. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, so just a number of different things. So you can kind of go through here and, you know, create a note with a link to your location on Evernote. Email yourself a fun and random GIF, which is useless, but that was the example that they had pre-installed when you did it. And sure enough, two seconds later in my email, I got a new email, and it was a very useless GIF. And I'm pretty positive I didn't check it beforehand, so I'm risking losing here. Do button.
It is.
There it is.
That's a cool widget.
So then, instead of opening up the app, I can just have this parked on my home screen.
That's good.
And hit the widget button.
And you can avoid the...
Exactly.
Ridiculously large text that says, get me out of an awkward situation.
What? I don't know what you're talking about. Hold on. I've got a call. Wait a minute. Is this the awkward situation? Anyways, cool little kind of way to build a, actions. Something that you do regularly. You can kind of fashion it here and create a button out of it. And I like the approach. I like what they're doing. And I'm happy that I saw it earlier today because it made me realize kind of the power of it. So... very cool stuff. So that is Do Button by IFTTT. That's free in the Play Store. Dare I say, we have a pretty good selection.
That's a good lineup. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Let's see here. So you can go to the Play Store to Google Plus and go to the community page for All About Android right now and find it. But you can't go to the shortened URL because I haven't done it yet. But 90 seconds. I know. I need a do button to do this. Okay, it's set up now. AAAPoll.com/209. Go there. Place your vote for your favorite app today. Is it Do Button? Is it Y-Man? Or is it Fuse? Check it out.
What is that URL again?
AAAPoll.com/209. There we go. AAAPoll.com/209.
It'd be really interesting with the Do Button would be the whole pulling Android apps onto Chrome and making a bunch of desktop Do Buttons. The three limitation is a problem.
Yeah. Now that I think about it, I feel like that needs to be open.
Yeah, exactly. You need a little more than three, I think.
Yeah, I don't understand why that isn't opened a little
bit. But it'd
be
cool to have a little, like, just to hit one button and do a whole thing. I guess you could use IFTT for that. I don't know, but still. But I like the design of Do.
I want to create a Do button that creates a Do button. Because I create so many Do buttons.
It's going to be a loop.
Anyways, there you go. All right. That is it. This episode is history. It's in the books. It's on the internet. That's all I got. That's all I got. Daniel Bader of Mobile Syrup, it's always awesome having you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on. And you were talking, was it before the show or during the show? I can't remember at this point. You're going to be at Google I.O.
I will. Come and say hi.
Fantastic.
If you're there as well. Yeah, I thank you so much. It's always so fun to come on this show. And you guys are great. So even though you're American, that's okay. I
don't hold it against us, please. Seriously. Don't hold it.
We do our
us.
Best to be to be American. I don't know what I'm saying. It's always great to have you, Daniel. It's awesome.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So I guess, are you working on anything cool right now? What do you want to tell people as far as where they can find your work, what you're working on, all that kind of stuff?
Well, my day job is editor-in-chief of MobileSyrup.com, Canada's largest tech blog. And I'm currently trying to do the same thing, I think, that everybody with the HTC One M9 and the Galaxy S6 in both hands is trying to do, which is compare the two cameras. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be my, you know, I want to prove that you can make the HTC One M9 a great device for taking photos. It just takes a little bit more tweaking than it does on the S6. So I'm going to prove that you can take as good, if not better, shots on that device, because I love it in so many other ways.
Oh,
and that's my project for this week.
Do you think if the camera element is corrected, you would have a hard time recommending, you know, the S6 over it, or would it be a pretty close race at that point?
I think the software on the One M9 is just so far beyond what the S6 can offer. I think TouchWiz is still as much improved as it is. It's still clunky, and I just think HTC is a great company, and I love supporting it. Mm-hmm. I just wish that they had the vertical integration that Samsung has in order to buy those components and get those top of the line parts, so that they can make the best phone that I know that they can.
Right.
Well, so that's my project.
Excellent. So I imagine that's probably going to hit MobileSyrup.com someday soon.
Oh yeah,
in the near
Check
future,
back in a couple days.
Excellent. And you can find Daniel on Twitter at JourneyDam. Radical. Thank you, sir. We'll have you back soon.
Appreciate it.
Ron, what about you, sir?
Excellent. If you enjoy my shenanigans, you can go to about.me/RonXO, where you can find links to all my social media stuff. And that's all I got this week.
I enjoy your shenanigans.
My shenanigans can be fun.
You can also go to RonXO.thinkup.
Yes, I haven't done ThinkUp in a while. Go to RonXO.thinkUp, where you can see analysis of my shenanigans.
Yes. Data on Ron's shenanigans.
Exactly. There you go. See how many retweets I got.
And let me tell you, people want to know how many retweets.
Listen, I'm
favorite.
I'm getting faves left and right. That's all I'm saying here. I'm favorited every day.
What about you, Brian?
You can find me TDing Before You Buy. And on Thursdays, I do a show with Padre called Know How. And we'll be showing you how to fix your 1989 original Game Boy in case you were thinking about getting rid of that. I know it's kind of
Get rid of it.
I know. I'm very nostalgic about old tech that I played with as a kid. And of course, Padre will be showing you something about quadcopters. When isn't he? But check out our How To Show Thursdays, 11 o'clock Pacific Time. What about you, Jason?
Well, about.me/Jason Howell. I'm Google Plus. Do stuff on there a lot. At Jason Howell on Twitter.
Let's not forget the music.
YellowGoldMusic.com.
Never let go of the music, Jason.
I won't let go. All right. I just might not write it for a while. But I'll be back. Damn it. I'll be back. I also do another Android show called Android App Arena, where I review at least four brand new, sometimes not so brand new, but still cool Android apps each week. That's Android App Arena. Go to twit.tv/arena, and you can find it there. It's every week. So between this show and that show, that's like a ton of apps. So check it out. That is it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us today. Voicemails can be left to us at 347-SHOW-AAA. You can always send us an email at AAA@twit.tv. You can also send us a link to a video in that email, and we appreciate that. Twitter, we are at Android Show. We're on Reddit, twitaaa.reddit.com. We have our show notes and past episodes found at twit.tv/AAA, as well as on YouTube and iTunes. And you can catch us live every Tuesday starting at 5 p.m. Pacific, live.twit.tv. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android. See you guys.